I mean, the simple answer is no. There is a separate way of paying back to compensate victims. So victims can be compensated, but not through the assets. Or not through the asset confiscation process would be a better way of putting it. What happens to the assets is that when they're all seized, part of it goes back to the government, and, you know, in reality is an income stream to them. But part of it comes back to the agencies. So I think I got back last year about £250,000 back into policing as a result of those assets being seized. I'm sure there are other agencies here who can say that they got money back as well. So not all of it, I have to say, but a significant proportion of it comes back into the local criminal justice agencies so that they can spend it providing a better service. What I'm doing, and I think you would hopefully agree it's a sensible thing to do, is putting some of that money into more analysts to identify more assets so that I can seize even more money in future years. And I just think that that's a good way of doing it. But be assured that there are other ways of compensating victims. It just isn't done by that mechanism. I think the difficulty with that, and I do take your point, is that the income generation from assets is still relatively new. If I'm going to put a police officer on the street from that, I've got to know that I've got the same amount of money next year and the year after and the year after that. And whilst ultimately, once this system gets fully established, it might do that, at this stage, I think it's just seen as high risk. That if we had a particularly difficult year in terms of not just seizing it, but collecting the assets, and they didn't come into the bank, suddenly I'm employing people that I can't afford to pay. So, I mean, I think that what you're saying is sensible. It's just a bit early and a bit risky to start doing it immediately. But, down the line, I would predict that one of the ways in which we do manage to increase our capacity as a police service and a criminal justice system will be, in effect, through the assets of criminals. And I think we'd all agree that's a pretty good thing to do. But it would just be, trust me, it would just be risky to start doing it at this stage while those income streams are still very new. I've got to say, I got £250,000 last year. I only got about £50,000 the year before that. And, you know, it's still early to start saying, right, I'm going to make big investment decisions based on what is still a fairly fragile funding stream. But I do believe, you know, when my successor standing here in 5 years' time, I think he or she will be given a very different answer to that question. But I just think we need to walk before we can run. I don't know does anybody from the kind of court side want to talk about how this gets seen?
I'll do my best. A lot of it, of course, is cash, and that's simply recovered. A lot of it is property that is seized and is subsequently sold to auction, and the value of it is put into the fund. And regrettably, a lot of it doesn't make as much money as was anticipated. So many of the orders are made for very large sums, and the assets that are recovered don't recover that full amount when they're actually sold. A lot of it's real property, things like houses and cars.
Hotel we got.
So you see, there's quite significant items which ultimately have to be sold. So it's very difficult to set up a shop to set up all these things.
Yeah, I mean, not joking, but a guy called Robert Briggs Price, who went to prison for 30 years not so long back, who had a massive asset confiscation order made against him, we became the owner of a hotel, which again, you know, we haven't kept it, sadly, but you have to sell it, as Graham says, you know, and try and get the market value for it, and then the money goes into the pot. But we couldn't create a shop for it, but we do have processes that turn, you know, cars, tellies, you name it, into money. Because ultimately it's got to turn into money if we're going to turn it into other things. I'm going to get rid of it eventually, Mark. I don't know if you want to talk about that CDSSS and things like that.
I'll just try and say a few words about that. Probably better than when you experienced it, but probably equally nowhere near where we want it to be, I think, is the honest answer. We have a programme of work that we're working on jointly together at the moment, which is national, but obviously all areas are doing it. And the aim of that is really to make, particularly in the magistrates' courts, you know, make cases go through quickly and with the simplest possible process that's proportionate to the sort of case you're talking about. And I'll ask my colleagues in the judicial side if they want to add. essentially that's where we are, and the early signs of that, we've only had that process up and running so far in Mansfield since August. We're doing early work in Nottingham, we'll be up and running there at Christmas. All the evidence from places that started up earlier is that having a significant effect in making the process better, both in terms of speed and effectiveness, but also more importantly, when you do get a trial and you get victims and witnesses needing to come along, there's a greater degree of certainty that that trial will happen on the day it's fixed. And that really has to be at the heart of what we're trying to achieve. I don't know if Graham or Morris want to add anything.
Thank you. One of the points that you were concerned about was delays and adjournments in the, particularly the magistrates' court, I think, where over the years that there has been an adjournment culture. Nobody would deny that. Over the past two or three years, increasingly, there has been a great deal more case management organisation. Judges are under a great deal of pressure these days to actively and robustly manage cases through the process of the court. Particularly cases that are going to trial. Those cases where a defendant is pleaded not guilty, there has to be a trial. The aim is to have the trial as soon as is possible, consistent with fairness on both sides. And ultimately, we hope that Nottinghamshire will be able to comply with the aim under the new initiative, which is that trials should take place within 6 weeks of the first appearance in court. We're not quite there with it yet, but a great deal of work is being done towards it. But please accept it from me. We do a great deal of work every single hour of every day to actively and robustly case manage to have things dealt with as speedily as possible.
Thanks, Morris. I mean, I would just say one other thing, because, I mean, as Morris says, it's an adversarial system, you know, and not everybody has it in their interest to make things happen quickly. I think that the way in which legal aid is changing at the moment takes a lot of the perverse incentives out of that system. But one thing that we can control, and I think we've been very impressive on, is that sort of area of when someone has been given an order by the court to do a particular thing, and they don't do it, how quickly is it enforced? And I think what I would say to you is that if you went into court now, what you would certainly see is that that has changed on the recognition. And, you know, I take my hat off to the probation service for the work that they've done on that. But if you look at the kind of national league tables of enforcing community penalties, Nottinghamshire is always at or near the top. And you know, I think that that's a huge tribute both to the probation service and the court about how, and it's a great example of how they, you know, they've looked at it together, got their act together, do it fairly, but do it robustly. And I think that, you know, from our perspective, and I, you know, just take kind of a single agency police perspective, we do our utmost to get our police officers out there as much as we possibly can. Some of it, you know, you look at why are they not there? What are they doing? And okay, some of it's paperwork. So what we're trying to do about paperwork is, over the next 18 months, 2 years, hopefully at the most, we're trying to give every one of our officers a handheld computer so they can do it all out on the street rather than be in the police station. Some of it is that actually, you know, you ring up for them to turn out and they're in somebody's house rather than they're driving cars. Yeah, and I agree. Some of it is about actually getting people known by the community, and what we have invested in massively in Nottinghamshire is neighbourhood policing. And, you know, are there enough? No, I'd love there to be twice as many as there are. But certainly, you know, and I have to go on what we're going to see when we survey the public. In the surveys that we do about neighbourhood policing, the levels of the public who say, yes, I know who my neighbourhood officer is, I know what they do, is far higher in Nottinghamshire than it is in a lot of other parts of the country. Now, I'm not saying that's adequate, but all I am saying is, be assured that, you know, we are not sitting in Sherwood Lodge thinking of reasons to keep them off the street. We're thinking of reasons to get them back out there because we understand and we share the aspiration that you state.